So let's see. Okay. Olga Belindo. Okay, well, thank you again for participating in the project. This project, this project is really set up to benefit the community now and in the future. The goal of the questionnaire is to get a coherent and complete narrative of your life as possible. So you can feel free to answer as long as you need to get everything you want to say out. We realize that even though you did sign our consent form, at any moment, if you want to change something, you want to omit something, you can simply let us know, whether you decide now or later on after I leave.
Okay.
All right. And we will be using these interview materials for educational purposes, for exhibit purposes, if possible, if we can create packages for museums and things like that. That's really what we want to try to put together.
Let's start with the first question.
I'm going to put this over here. Interrupting. Okay, that's going. And the first question. Okay, tell me about your place of birth, where you were born, and what was it like growing up there.
Okay, I was born in a place in Panama that's now known as Chorrillo, but that was not the name when I was a child. I left there when I was 4 years old. So I do not have too much recollection. I do know that I think my mother was wise because I would not have liked to have lived there in my other years. Knowing what it was as I grew up because I became acquainted, she showed me exactly the house. I would not have liked to have been there after I reached maybe 5 years, but I lived before that. And then we went to what was called at that time La Boca Canal Zone. And that's what I can remember from. I started school at 7 years in the Canal Zone public school system. And I went through until the eighth grade. My childhood days there was very, very pleasant because I was a good student. I made high grades. And they used to have an honor roll system, and therefore I was always on the honor roll, which meant a whole lot to me. So those were pleasant days. The only thing that, well, no, I realized that I was doing wrong to myself. I didn't realize it then. And that is I didn't take part in the sports activities. I just loved reading, and I'd read anything that my aunts could find. And sometimes, as I grew older, I read the wrong kind of material because the way my mother spoke against it, I realized that it was not right. But my years up until the eighth grade was, to me, profitable and enjoyable.
Okay. Tell me about your fondest memories from your childhood, friendships, and things like that.
Yes, well, my memories that, as I mentioned, that I was not a social person. I was very shy as I grew up, and I tried to avoid a lot of social activities, and I part was due to my upbringing. My mother was very, very, she was a strict disciplinarian, and my father used to threaten that if any of my sister or I got pregnant, it was when it hung us in the ceiling, and I took it literal. So I was afraid to have boyfriends. So my social life was kind of limited. I think the most fondest memories would have been social events at the church. But out with in the neighborhood, no. I was very shy, and I didn't want to displease my parents. So, and I went to sewing classes and crochet classes, and those things then used to be what took up my, that was the major part of my life, church activities. Okay. I took part in several contests, and I loved to recite, and the concerts, and so at church, that made up my social life.
Which church in your college?
Seventh Day Adventist Church.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
You mentioned you like to read. What kind of books did you read?
Yeah, I used to read in the early days, like up to third and fourth grade, fairy tales. We had the red fairy book and the yellow fairy book and the some other color fairy book. I'd love to. I realize now that that was, I lived in a dream world. But when I got older, I liked biographies. I loved English class literature. I just love literature. I like to memorize portions when the teacher was giving the literature classes, portions for us to memorize, like from Bryant or from Longfellow, and those things, that was my excellency.
Do you have any friendships from when you were a kid that you still maintain today?
Yes. I have another lady. She's not young anymore. She's like me. But we were friends from I was in the third grade. She's in California now, and we still, in spite of the distance, we still maintain our friendship. And we're going back to school days now. Something unusual that I think that probably would be enlightening to the youth of today. Our language, we were taught English. We used the United States textbooks. We were taught everything about the United States, nothing about Panama. And when the language, of course, was English. So when we came out of the eighth grade, or like my mother and some others sent us to learn Spanish in the school system there. And you're now 13, 14. Most of us were graduating from eighth grade at 13. Some of us at 14. And then you have to go to town, to Panama, in the city, where you go to a school to learn Spanish, and they put you in third grade. I went in third grade. Some people went in second. And then the teacher would ask, ¿Cómo es su nombre? And I just kept staring at her, for I sure don't know what she said. And then it was amusing. It's amusing now, but it wasn't amusing then. That part of my childhood was not pleasant. Because so luckily, I didn't understand what the children were saying. And later now, as I learned a little of the language and things, I realized that in some cases they were teasing me. And they were making mock. You know, and they laugh at the English because that sounded just as strange to them as Spanish sounded to me. So in that transition of trying to learn the language, that was difficult. What helped me through I didn't fail any grade because I memorized the classes. Didn't have any trouble with mathematics because the teacher would send us to go to the blackboard and show them, the other students and me, show them what she was trying to portray. In other words, we were really teaching them at our level because this is something you're going to be showing. You are finished with grade and you're going to be showing them how to divide and add and multiply. That was very easy. But the other subjects, I memorized it. And I know Panama is the capital of Panama, but I don't know what that's saying. And that's how many rivers we have and things like that, and that's where I learned a little geography and history. But I memorized it and said it was root learning and not actually meaning anything intellectual. Mm-hmm. That part of the growing up wasn't pleasant. Mm-hmm. One time the teacher, I got a punishment because a child wrote a little note. I can't tell you what it said now, but I know what it means now. But it was immoral. Gave me that note and told me to take it to the teacher. Because some of the children were mischievous, but some of the practical jokes they played was not nice. And those used to be embarrassing things. And we had to go through that. You did find some very nice ones, and we could exchange. I do their mathematics for them, and then they befriend me and kind of explain as best as they could what was going on. And that was the way I learned Spanish.
So there was some good friendship, there were some other not so.
Yes.
Wow. Now, for this next question, I'd like to turn on the video camera.
Tell me what your question is first.
Yes, exactly. It's going to be about your parents and grandparents.
Okay.
You remember
right.
When they came from.
Very good. Yes.
I'll stand over here. Meanwhile. Your parents and your grandparents, what were they like, where were they from, and how did they come to Panama?
My grandmother, I never knew my grandfather. He died before my mother got married. My grandmother, all of my grandparents and my parents were from Barbados. And I used to like to hear the stories that they would tell me. My father came to the Isthmus, I think in 1906 or 1900, something like that. And he worked as a young man in the Treasury Division. And as a matter of fact, I think he worked there until he retired. But I do think that prior to that, he was working on the locks. And one of the things that I remember about him, of him telling us and showing us too, it was a big mark that he had on his leg in one of the explosions that they were using digging the canal. He had got injured, and I do remember him going to the hospital, and he explained to us how they were digging the canal in order for us to have what we have today. And also my grandmother, she was here, she came and brought my mother. My father did not come on contract. He came with a group of men that heard that they were having work in Panama, and he left Barbados. The thing about my parents was that they never went back to the country. Take, for instance, my mother. I took her back in the year 72, and at that time she was away from Barbados over 53 years, and that was her first trip, and I wanted to know the land of her birth, and so we went. It was a real enjoyable trip, and I was very, very happy, not only to see where my parents were born. Both of my parents were from Barbados. My father was from St. Peter's, my mother was from St. John, and it was such a privilege for me to go and know both parishes and to see them. And then I said, Barbados is a beautiful island. And the thing that impressed me the most was how courteous the people were. And my parents always told me that Barbados has a high percentage of, what's that word, of people that, you know, go to school, and I forgot the word that we use for that.
Literacy.
There is a high percentage of literacy. And so you find, too, that they're very nice people to talk to, very cooperative, very courteous, and then they're learners, you know. I really enjoyed that. And then coming back, my grandmother grew up on a slavery farm. And so she used to tell me what she could remember as a child from there. And you know, at that time, even when I was that small, because my grandmother died when I was about 13. And so I can remember the stories that she would tell me. And, you know, I used to think slavery is awful. I still think so too. I think that my parents were very influential in their lives in working in bringing a certain culture to Panama, because when they would tell me how things were when they came here, and how the native Panamanian lived and dressed and, you know, everything was really kind of primitive. People would not believe that today. And she would tell us some of the things and the customs that they had right here in the city, because they had never been out of the city until after we were grown and we could take them. They lived there, what I could never understand, and I thought that was incredible. My parents did not know Spanish. Nothing at all. After a while, my mother knew a few words, but my father never even tried. And yet, how they were able to live in a city, a country where very few persons spoke English, not like today. And they were able to live and raise a family, and I think that that was incredible. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that answered my question, if yes. I had something else to really add to that.
That's very good. No, I think you answered quite a bit. Let me talk here for a second. Okay, that was a good time. I'll stop the video for now.
Mm-hmm.
Do a couple other questions and come back to video, but
yes.
I'm going to ask you about music, so that'll come in a little bit. Okay. So, good thing. Excellent. What sort of things do you remember eating or drinking with your parents, grandparents? What kind of food?
Yes. Cuckoo. Let me tell you about the cuckoo. My mother, that was her favorite dish. I'd sit down at times when her birthday was coming around after I started to work, and so my priority was really to make her happy. And I would think of what can I give her. But one of the things I always ended up with after she became sick and couldn't do for herself, and make sure that she has some cuckoo, because that was what was favorite for her. Our potato salad and all this she didn't too like, and fish. Well, I never did learn to fish the fish like how she liked it, because she wanted it stuffed and things with her sauce. And but I did fish the cuckoo, and I remember what made me learn to do it, because she always did it herself. And I watched her, but she would never let me do it. But one time she got sick, and of course no cuckoo because she's sick. So when she was saying, oh, I wish I could eat some cuckoo, she mentioned a neighbor that she knows that neighbor would fix it for her. She was from Barbados like herself. And I went and got this neighbor to do it. But that day I made up my mind that I was going to learn to fix this cuckoo. And I was going to make it like she would like it. So I did do that. And she was elated to know that I had really conquered the cuckoo. And then the fish was, she liked fish a whole lot. And we always liked when she made fish, and she was, I've never tasted nobody make soup taste as good as hers did. And yucca pudding, she was an expert in that. She taught me how to do the yucca pudding. And what else she used to like to do? Oh, my father, he made bakes. what I call frituras, but he called it bakes. And I never did like that. I didn't like that one. But the other thing, my mother liked to make gungo peas rice. Other than the gungo peas rice, she was not so keen on that. And my father, he had anything as long as it made food. And mama was a good cook. Yes. And what else did you say that to add?
Oh, drinking maybe?
Oh, drinking. Well, sorry. They liked the sorrel. My father, he liked liquor. So he used to do something that all of those Barbadian men called, but I cannot remember that name. I really tried hard to remember. They made it with lime and liquor, and I don't know what else. And that was a drink that my father liked. But the main drink that Mama liked was sorrel. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Do you have any memories about school, teachers in particular?
Yes.
Remember
I remember that is where I decided to be a teacher, because my first grade teacher, Mrs. Myers, And she was, I used to admire that lady. I adored her. And I always remember that there was another teacher, and I've always wished that I could have mentioned it to her. I've never mentioned it to her when I was older. She was, at the time, I had lost my pencil. That was in the first grade. That was another thing that impressed me to be a teacher. And the same Mrs. Miles that I liked so much, she put me out in the classroom for about an hour or something because I lost my pencil and I was to stand up outside in the aisle. And I was standing there just crying my heart out. And Mrs. Butcher, she's still alive, at least as far as I know. She was the director of music in later years. And she passed the time. She was a student teacher in the the normal school. They had a normal school in La Boca. That's where they were training the teachers. And she was a student then learning to be a teacher. And she passed and she said, "Little girl, what's wrong? I lost my pencil." And she says, "So your teacher put you up because you didn't have a pencil?" I said, "Yes." And here she handed me one. She said, "And you can go in the classroom now." And I've never forgotten that. But I never had an opportunity to tell her. And my mother had said to me after I was an adult, she said, "You know, you should tell Miss Butcher about that." I said, "I would always want to do it, but I never." But that impressed me. And I said, I mean, Miss Myers dropped a little in my estimation, but I still wanted to be a teacher. But I always remembered that kind act of Miss Butcher. And I was able to go to the classroom and could smile again and everything. I got my pencil now. And another teacher that impressed me a whole lot, and people my age and so on, younger ones too, will remember him. Teacher Martin, and we used to call him Pepper Martin because he'd get very upset and very mad when you couldn't get your lesson. Or he taught English and literature in the 7th grade, and I used to admire Teacher Martin so much. So then and there I decided anytime I get a chance to choose a career, it's going to be teaching. Because those teachers made quite an impression on me. And of course, when I was in the 8th grade, Teacher Stewart, he taught literature, history. And he was a very good teacher. And I remember all of those. Then of course, when I went to college, there was this Professor Bull. He taught modern history. And he was a good professor, and I always remember him for that.
Mm-hmm. I have heard about Pepper Martin.
Yes, man. He was very light complexion, mm-hmm. And when he get vexed, he'd get red. That's why we call him Pepper Martin.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see. Let me ask you about music. This isn't the part where I'm going to turn that on. I have a specific question.
Yes.
I'll turn it on for now. Just what music do you remember hearing a lot when you were growing up? And is it the same as now, or has it changed yet?
Well, I'm going to tell you, in the home, my mother was very particular about what books we read, what music we listened to. And when I was growing up, we didn't have any TV. And what we had was gramophone, they used to call it back then. Gramophone, it was a music box. And you went with your manual with the hand, and then you put on this disco. It's the, album, we would say today. And my father used to them, of course, we were not allowed to go to it. And I can't remember the music that Papa used to play. But remember, the only music that we had in that house with the hymns that I played after I learned to play piano. And even sometimes when we would put it and go on to bed, and you see Mama would say, when you're going to listen to it, she says, go and play your piano. And so I heard a lot of music that I would hear when I was in my 20s and things. I never knew them. Only when we were going on the bus that I would hear the radio playing certain songs. And there were those, I like the romantic ones. And so, but I cannot distinguish or tell you what music was being played during the time, because I was not exposed to it. And I didn't go to dances and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What do you listen to now? What kind of music do you like now?
Well, now I like Southern, it's the Negro spirituals. I like classicals. And most of the music I listen to is really religious music. But on the secular hand, I like him. There are some Este albums that I like. My husband had a lot of sentimental, and I like that. And apart from that, mostly religious. This I didn't like too much Mahalia, but I like some of the that we had some of those there from this. What is this man's name? Not Robinson. There's the. I can't remember his name. My head is not good when it comes to those things. But those are the music that I like. I don't like reggae. I just cannot even take that. And some of the regular ones that they play now, those that are, I always like to hear the words. And if they're uplifting and, you know, inspirational and things like that, I like it. But a lot of the things, what they call music today, I don't call it music. And so it really does not appeal to me.
What about sayings? Do you have any favorite sayings? The sayings that maybe your mother, your grandmother used to say to you, or that you used to say to your children?
Yes. With everything I say, calamity. That's the first thing that comes out of my mouth as soon as something happens and it's unusual. But my mother, she didn't have too many enough things that she would say, really. And they're not that I can think of.
Mm-hmm. Okay, for this question, I did want to turn on the camera. The question is, have you ever heard of Louise Bennett and the Mighty Sparrow? Either one of the two, one or the other, or both?
Louise Bennett, here in Panama? Mm-hmm. Yes, she was a teacher, I think.
Well, Louise Bennett, way before me, as I understand it, she was Jamaican, and I think she was a poet.
Oh, that's the one that wrote... Jamaica Readings.
Maybe.
Yes, Jamaica Readings.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Right. We'll start with Louise Bennett then. Okay, tell me what you know about Louise Bennett.
Yes, Louise Bennett, as far as I understand, tries to portray the life of the black man, or black woman for that matter, in Jamaica or any of the West Indies, and her poems used to be written in patois. We call it patois, but really it's broken English. But I remember when I was in high school, we had a young man who could really recite those things, and you just crack up. Of course, you had to understand what it was trying to say, because it's not all the time you probably get it at the first instance. But he was very good. I remember when he used to talk about when passing Miss Church, and this person preached. I don't remember the name of the guy, but it used to be very interesting. And in those days, and that was in the 49, 50, early 50s, and we'd have programs at what was the Pacific Clubhouse. And this guy, he was from Cologne. He would recite it, and the audience would just crackle. It was really good. And at first, they explained to us, I read an article that said, what listening to the poems and reading them, you would think that she was just an ordinary person from the street. And then I was able to appreciate it when I went to college in Jamaica, because I really heard the people, some of them speak just like how those poems said. And I remember once we were in a bus, and the people, somebody was flagging the bus down, stopping the bus, and the chauffeur said, "Nah, me not got space for our whisper." And I said, "Oh yes, that's like what the lady said it." But what I was about to say is that she had her degree in either English or grammar or something, but she was an educated woman. It was only to show you that type of life and so. And another thing that I learned, and this is recently, like in like 2000 or like a little before 2000, I went on a cruise and we stopped at Montego Bay. And on the bus, there were the bus, the chauffeur, and this lady that was the guide. They were talking, and some of the things they were saying, I didn't really get it. But then when the lady spoke to us, she spoke perfect English. So then I realized that, oh, this is a language by itself, or dialect. And you know, they're talking, the way the person talks, I don't know exactly how they call it, but they are making things known, but that means that they can speak perfect English. Yes. So then I found out, then I was able to appreciate more Louise Bennett's literary work because of hearing the man on the street talking the two things.
You're only the third person we finally got in that knows Louise Bennett, so that's really great.
Yes.
Did you ever hear anybody refer to her as Auntie Rochi or something like
No.
that? No. One other person mentioned.
Yes.
Okay, and then the other question I want to ask you about is about the Mighty Sparrow. No? With video, do you know?
Oh, not much. Okay, father, I knew.
Okay.
The one I said about your mother and your father.
Okay, let me get you with that one. Okay. Tell me what you've heard about the Mighty Sparrow.
I guess that he would be in the same category. I'd put him in the same category like Bennett, because he was in his that's not reggae. That is what's the word they call what he did. Calypso. In his calypso, he portrayed the black man's role, but it was very humorous, and I don't know much about it, but I do know there was a song that I used to like to hear, and he says, your father, but your mother don't know, and your mother, not your mother, but your father don't know, and something like that. But I would put him in the category with the same Lady Bennett. It was educated and everything, but I think that those calypsos were, I don't know much more about the calypsos.
Okay.
Yes.
Now, you already told me what you thought about reggae, so I want to ask you about that. Okay, this is my next question. How would you classify yourself in terms of identity? And does the way you classify yourself depend on where you are? You know, identity, by that I mean cultural identity and so forth.
Yes, well, I think that when I started school, and while I was in, you know, in La Boca environment, I didn't have too much of any special way of thinking about myself. But when I went to learn Spanish, and then I realized that, oh, these people classify us as if we are category lower than most other people, then that made me think, oh no, after all, we have a heritage that, you know, people really don't think that is worth much. But it really does. Because I started to compare what my parents had told me about their previous lives here in Panama and compared to what it was now. But so I have always been proud to be who I am. You know, and I realized that as time went on, some of the younger generation were not very happy to be black. And I am saying that, what? I always like to read these about some of these Negroes who have become one of my, one that I used to admire a whole lot was, what is his name now? The one that was in the White House before Rice, Colin Powell. I used to admire him, and I read books about him, and I know that when you are black and you know who you are and you know that you don't have to be feeling that you're inferior to another race, you can live happy. And then I, one of the things that up to now, I'm 85, but it still inspires me some days, and not every day, because some days I feel lousy. But it still inspires me that what we should try, and that's what I've tried to put into the heads of my daughter and my nephew and niece, try to make a contribution to the world in which you live. Because after all, it's one life. And the important thing is for us to live in a way then that when you are past and gone, your contribution will be there. And there is a song that I came across the other day that I liked so very much. I can't remember the name of the author, but it says that, you know, the essence is, I have enjoyed this and that and the other, and I want to put something back in the world before I go. And I feel that young people with that kind of a vision become somebody in this world. They give a contribution because they have a perception of, they have a program on one of the canals that says, how the word is again? Or it says, it's gone from me, but like it means to say doing something better. That part is, you mentioned that I could maybe change something. When I remember that, I'd like to put it in. Making a difference. Haciendo la diferencia. That's it. Making a difference. And in this interview, one of the things that I would like to mention that I have not said in any of the questions that I have done, but I want to say that what has helped me to achieve some of the things that I wanted is the way that I view God. I don't view Jesus as a person that lives in heaven. I view him as real. I view him as, I view the Lord as someone who has given me my life and everything, and whatever I do, wherever I go, whatever I live, I should do something to uplift him. And I feel that just as how when I was younger, I always said people, it was not that I was so good, but because I always had a vision of making my parents proud of me, I always feel that I want Jesus to be proud of me.
Okay.
tell me about, we talked about this a little bit, but maybe there are other things you might want to say. What kind of things come to mind when someone says the word West Indian? What kind of objects, things, you know,
I usually feel that sometimes, it might not be always, but sometimes when people say West Indians, I'm talking all right about Panama, I sense that they are thinking you are some kind of a different species. Like the lady that's working with me, what we were talking about recently, a couple of days ago, I don't remember exactly what the conversation was, but she said, ¿Cómo la hacía su pueblo? Se hace mi pueblo. ¿Qué quiere decir por mi pueblo? Bueno, es de la gente de su raza. Hace, mire, yo nací aquí en Panamá, así que yo no tengo ningún pueblo ni gente de mi raza. Yo soy como usted, panameño. I said that to him to say that. They look to me, I might be wrong, but I get the impression that when they say West Indies most of the time, they're thinking you're some kind of a race. Will I think that West Indies are like Costa Ricans or Panamanians or Americans? It's just a location on the map, you know. But I don't feel that people should differentiate on, okay, my parents are from Barbados, or we are friends from Jamaica, or what. I don't think that they should look at us as if we are a species, because it's just where we're born, part of the globe. That's the way I look at it.
That's true. That's fair. You are married, or are you
widowed?
Widowed, And you have how many children?
One daughter.
One daughter. Mm-hmm. Okay. She lives in Panama.
No, Florida.
Florida.
Yes.
Okay. Do your children and grandchildren, your daughter and any grandchildren, mm-hmm. do they all speak English and Spanish, or how?
A daughter speaks English and Spanish, but her children, they all speak English because they were born in the United States, and she's been promising. One boy, especially, has shown interest in learning Spanish, and so she wants him to come here. The plan was that he'd come one vacation, and she, as a matter of fact, she had planned that for last year, and I got me to talk to a Spanish teacher at university that gives English to, that gives Spanish to people that don't speak Spanish, and make arrangements to help him out. Now, my nieces and nephews, they're all born here. The niece, she takes pride in speaking English grammatically. She's always admired her for that. She's always take pride in that. The boy, he speaks English like the grandma. But now he's working at a call center. I noticed that he's brushing up on that. But both my sister and I, we always, speak to them in English. Even my daughter, what I used to do, when she would talk to me in Spanish, I answer her in English. And I taught her English from using the Bible. When we would have worship, we'd take a Psalms, and when everybody else is finished with reading the whole that chapter, we are just at paragraph by verse 2, because and word by word, and she learned English like that, and I spoke English to her. And when she went to the States, she didn't have any problem. Mm-hmm. She was versed in all three languages.
How do your children and grandchildren define themselves culturally?
Well, I think when my daughter, she has adjusted nicely going to the States. She has adjusted herself, and I think that she is proud of her. As a matter of fact, she came down here to take me up there in November, and she brought herself outfit of the pollera and things for her children. But when they have Inter-American Day in the church, that they would wear that. And she likes to talk about Panama. She's all right. The one that I signed had a problem with having himself defined as having an English background, was my nephew. Up to now, he has most of his friends are Latins, and he, as I mentioned, he never really got into speaking English like we wanted him to. But as he has matured, I think he's pretty comfortable with who he is.
How do you define your community, or who would you say is your community? This relates a little bit to the question you answered.
Well, yes, I would say I live in my community, Chinese, and in this street, I'm the only one that speaks English, and I never had problem relating to my neighbors. And I think that they all know me as somebody that they can talk to when they have problems. And if I have a problem, I think that there are a few of them that will be there for me. And, well, one of the things that I being an Adventist, there are some things that I don't participate in. But I have been very grateful for the way that they accept my religion. For when we first moved in here back in 70, we had formed a community group, like a club. And we would meet in different homes alternately. And I noticed they knew that I don't go to these functions on Friday nights or any time during the day, Saturdays, and they'd always put it for Saturday nights. And when you say anything, they say, "La Señora Lindo no puede asistir, y Señor Lindo." And I appreciated that. And I tried to be neighborly with them. And I don't try to push my religion on them. If we're having anything at the church that I think they would enjoy, I tell them about it. And different ones will go with me at different times. And I think that one time we had a corporation that we could pay someone for Seguridad in the community, and we participate now husband and I. And anything that they have that they should be, the club after a while, everybody got so busy, and some were going to the university at night or what, but and then some neighbors moved away, other neighbors came in, and I guess that the neighbors that came in later were not as neighborly, I might say, as the first set, so we don't have that bonding that we had. So now we don't have that club anymore, and we don't visit each other, but when we see each other, we greet good and everything like that. Yes.
Yeah, that's like my street, we all grew up as little kids, and now we're all gone, because yes, we're all adults. And,
right.
But when we see each other, it's like,
yes.
You know. Almost near the end, what would you like to send a message to the younger people, the community? What would be a message?
The message, yes. Well, what I have noticed that I would really like to address to them is I would like our young people to value, to put more value on morals, more value on even life, and appreciate life for what it is. It hurts my heart when I see the lot of violence, and I think that if they knew that life is a gift that from God, and it's precious, so we should try to do the best that we can in living it to its fullest, not just really, I have an aim in view, I have an aim for life, what you would like to be, what you would like to accomplish, what you would like your children after you to become. And of course, they're going to be better than you are. They will be maybe less, but not better. So aim for the best. And for the those of the black origin, I'd like to tell them, don't be ashamed of your color. Don't be ashamed of your origin, because blacks have contributed a whole lot, not only to Panama, but to the world. And you can be anything you want to be, providing you have the right morals and the right viewpoint, right perspective, and above all, have God in your life.
Okay, now the last questions are just quick demographics. Your year of birth?
1922.
Last grade of school, please?
14.
Age 14?
No, this grade. In other
14.
Words, second year in college.
Yeah. And what is your profession?
Teaching.
What level did you teach?
The primary.
Okay, any last things you'd like to add that we haven't mentioned yet?
I think you have covered sorrow.
Quite a lot, huh?
Questionnaire
and quite expensive.
One of the things I know I wanted to have always mentioned, and that was that the school system that we had back then. And we covered that. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah,
we covered that.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you again. This is really going to contribute to a growing body of work.
I hope so.
We're getting a lot of very good
right.
Thank you so much.
I should give you something cool to drink.
Oh, sure. I'll take it. Let me turn it off.